Hello, and welcome to another episode of Mike M's Weekly Reads. It's been a while. Actually a long while. It seems like it's been almost a month. But I've been pretty busy and I just haven't had the time. I haven't found the time to do this. And also stressed out because of the political environment. It's just been giving me a lot of anxiety and now that the dust is clearing, I think I can move on a little bit. But what have I been doing? I haven't been buying a lot of back issues other than through the comic shop. I kind of stopped doing the eBay thing for a while. I did get an Aaron Meyer shipment, but I think I already talked about that. I got one more in the queue, but I haven't shipped it. It hasn't shipped yet. I've been focusing on completing Cable, and I got as far as I could from the local comic shop. And I was kind of stupid because he has this like 30% off just for any customer. And you got to remember that I stopped going to the LCS for my monthly books, but I still go there almost weekly. And I'll pick up a few miscellaneous, like some cover Bs and stuff like that off the shelf, or anything that strikes my fancy, but I usually take advantage of the 30% off back issues. And I got into a Deadpool Cable kick, and I'm still on it actually. I'm experiencing it through New Mutants right now. I'm reading the Liefeld run of New Mutants, which introduced Cable, and now he's kind of their mentor, and they're sort of dealing with him as a new mentor. I'll be getting into Deadpool soon. And then I had read the Gail Simone run of Agent X. I just, God, I became a Deadpool fan. And I've been reading the latest Deadpool. So a lot of my tastes have changed because I used to hate Deadpool. And what I've found with age is I'm not turning into the get off my lawn kind of person, especially when it comes to comics. I'm turning into a more accepting individual of all comics, and I try to look at things through a different lens every time I pick it up. And I am a mood reader, so it is fair to say that when I pick up a book, it's usually because I'm in the mood for it. But that's not always the case. We do pick out books for DC Spotlight. We do pick out books for Geek Brunch. And I'm not always in the mood for it, but if it's really a good book, I get in the mood pretty fast. If it's something I wasn't in the mood for, sometimes I'll grade it a little lower because just I'm a mood reader. That's what I do. Like a couple weeks ago, I read that Peanuts or the funny version of Savage Dragon. And I was like, man, I haven't read Savage Dragon in a while, even though I get it, and I like read the issue before because it has a backup comic in there, and it was part one, and in the Sunday comics issue, it was part two, and I read part two, and I wanted to read part one, so I went back to Savage Dragon 251, and I'm like, God damn, this is so good. Why am I so far behind on Savage Dragon? It just, Rob Liefeld, on Rob's observations, he's currently talking about Deathmate, which the Valiant Image crossover, which was very interesting because he instigated the Steve Marjowski crossover initially, and then it went to Jim Lee and then became Deathmate. And they, various creators bought into it. But Rob wanted to, he was like strung up on the word blood. So he was like, wow, they came out with the character Bloodshot. I want to do Young Blood Bloodshot. And I want to call it This Blood's for You. And the one thing that you learn about Rob is he's very opinionated. He usually backs what he says, which I like, and he does kiss his butt a little bit, a lot. Like, he's not humble, and I like more humble people, but there's something about his energy that I just adore, and I learn a lot. But he talks a lot about what draws him to comics. It's not like the realism of comics, or it's the fun. And that's what Savage Dragon is. It's just a fun comic. And I see the layouts, I see all the energy that Eric puts into every panel, and I could just love I just love it. But anyway, I don't even remember what I was talking about. I was kind of talking about mood reading. But I was given a question by Drew from Comics for Fun and Profit. It's a podcast I still listen to. I stopped listening to only one podcast and I added some more, but now I have more than I need. But I am walking more and doing, like anytime I do type of physical activity, I do listen to podcasts. And I sometimes, like 90%, I listen to it on the way to work, even though my work's like 10 minutes away. So yeah, I listen in the shower. Been listening to a lot of podcasts. I added Robservations on there. I listen to that regularly. I added the Challengers podcast, which is a retailer podcast. And I added what was that one? Oh, the Bright Side Chat. Not the movie one, but the one that's about comic books that comes out every Thursday. And I still listen to 11 O'Clock Comics. I still listen to Derek's podcast when it does come out. It just surprises me. It comes out so infrequent that when it does come out, sometimes I forget and I have two in the queue. But I think that's my the podcast that I listen to now. I'm trying to think if I'm missing something. I probably am. I'm probably missing one. But I stopped listening to Comic Book Page because he doesn't do the sales figures anymore. That's the one I listen to. I used to listen to the trade one. He doesn't do that anymore because the market shifted and they don't get numbers. And if they do get numbers through Diamond, I guess it's just not enough because DC's not there. I don't know. And then they stopped doing the weekly spotlight and replaced it with like a weekly read type review of a back issue. And I lost interest. I left that. That actually put enough spots because that was weekly to do one more podcast. But then the other with the losing the Mayo reports on both of those, that kind of added like two more spots I could listen to. And yeah, that's kind of where I am in the podcast realm. But Drew left me a question on Twitter a long time ago, and I forgot to cut and paste it. Usually, when I get questions, I cut and paste it into just a notepad, and then I delete them as I go over them. And Drew started asking about like slabbing comics, like how I feel about it. And I think I've answered this in the past, but just to readdress it, I don't hate slab comics. I hate them for me. And I hate them for me, like to be in my house. I want to crack them open and I want to read them. I just can't leave them in that prison. A comic is meant to be opened. It's meant every page is glorious. It's just not the cover. So yes, I don't buy a lot of slab comics, but I like that they're there because sometimes you'll get decent graders or at least ballpark graders, and if you want to get a fine book and you don't trust eBay or something, you could go buy a slab book and you're guaranteed some level of grade and some kind of shipping protection. So that's where I'm at with graded books, is sometimes I'll buy it. I will look hard though for ungraded books before I go to a graded book. It's usually when I can't find something, or if I could get a great deal on the grade I want. And then my wife has this ability to crack those open without damaging the book. So there is that. I say, "Hey Barb, tear this fucker open for me," and she does it. But people collect what they want to collect. I have my weird collecting mannerisms, and if they want to collect a cover and display it, that's fine. I just don't like it personally. I like that it's out there so I could buy a graded comic book that has some kind of certificate with it. Yeah, that's all I have to really say about graded comics. I've only bought a handful. I'm drinking a naked fruit juice. We get these from Costco. Think they come in like a 16 pack or 20 pack, I can't remember. They're naked fruit juice, and one of my favorites is the Blue Machine. I like them all, but for some reason, the Blue Machine's texture is really smooth, and I like it. It's blueberries, apples, and I don't know what else is in here. I thought it would tell you, but it doesn't. It's got a picture of apples and grapes. And I can't make out what else. Strawberry in there. But I like it. It's good stuff. And then I had some questions that I had saved from Twitter, and I'll go to those. Kirk says he's still looking for Lysol spray. My wife always does too, and she's been pretty lucky. But she mostly finds it online or at Walgreens. Like, she has some kind of app that tells her what's arrived, and she'll go and get some Lysol. Lysol's supposed to be good for the COVID. So, yeah. It's hard to find the Lysol wipes though. I like the Lysol wipes better than any other brand because they put a lot of like bleach smelling, it's good smelling stuff, but it's bleached. And you just like, it has a lot of liquid on the bottom, which I like because if your cloth is getting dry, you could just like flip the container and then they're wet again. And I like that. But yeah, it's still hard to get the products that you want. Purell is still kind of hard to get. You have to get these off neighbor items, and they don't always smell the same. And then when you get like a good hand sanitizer, I like the ones that have like a smell that masks the vinegar or whatever smell. Like it's like a stinky smell. It smells like a cleaner they use at Buffalo Wild Wings, which I really don't like. But I like Buffalo Wild Wings, but it's like a sanitizer bleach kind of mix, and it's just stinks. Alcohol, bleach, I don't know what's all in it, but so the next question was the 80s were an exciting time for comics. With black and white explosion, do you see any similarities with the current crowdfunding explosion? I don't understand the crowdfunding explosion, but it's coming from like a guy who's always gone to comic shops. But for some reason, those crowdfunding seems to do better for a lot of people than it would if they solicited through Diamond, which is very interesting. But in terms of comics, what I look for in crowdfunding is usually the same creators. I tend to go to Evolution Comics and anything that they put out, Marcel Dupuis or any of his creators that are underneath that imprint, I'll get. Jimmy Palmiotti ones, I'll always get. I'm a repeat guy for Steve Bryant. There's a lot of them, and every time they hit a Kickstarter, I just get. And then if there's ones that I try and dip my toe into every now and then, and I like, I become loyal to them. So there's quite a few that I've enjoyed over the years. There's probably still a bunch, like if I went and audited, that I have never received, I just never got. So it's just one of those things. And they're expensive. And I'm doing my own Kickstarter called The Guesser. And I just had the cover colored, and it looked really good. So where I'm at with that is it's all drawn, the cover's colored. I'm anticipating coloring the whole book or maybe leaving it in black and white. I want to color it, especially based after seeing the colors on the cover. But it's expensive, man. I'm gonna take such a hit. Like even if I get like a bunch of listeners, I don't have a lot of listeners. I don't even know how many listeners I have, to tell you the truth, because I don't look at my numbers because I go through Derek Coward and I don't ask him for the numbers. So I don't know like if I have 100 downloads or 1,000 downloads. But let's always assume the worst. Let's say Geek Brunch Feed has 100 downloads a month. And let's say the DC feed has another, let's say that has 50 downloads a month. And let's say I could only get 50% of those people to buy into my Kickstarter because they know my podcast and or they like me, then I'm still looking at a small amount of, especially if they all go for like a $10 tier, I'm gonna be in the hole on this comic book so bad. But it's one of those things that once it's done, I can assess how bad I did and see if I ever want to do it again. But it's like I'll have something, and I could, show somebody something and say, I actually did a comic, and I'll never do it again, but I did one, and that's kind of cool. Even if I don't get that many, like, always been planned to assume the worst and hope for the best. I think I could recoup at least 20% of what I spent, and then just eat the rest of it. The art is already paid for, the cover's paid for, the coloring on the cover's paid for. So now I just gotta worry about the colors, the lettering, a logo. And then somebody to put the comic book together and print it. And I don't even know how that works, but I'll figure it out as I get there. But yeah, there's a big Kickstarter boom, and I think COVID is actually helping it. I think that's what it's that and people not wanting to get out of their house as much. They could just have comics delivered to their door. So, let me see what else we have. This is from Kirk as well. He says, "I know you have said some titles you didn't used to like are now appealing to you." I just talked about it. Is there a title that you used to love that doesn't impress you as much now? No. When I reread stuff that I tend to love it more than I loved it the initial time, and I don't know why that is, but I think it's because I remember where I read it from, or I have a glimpse of what it meant to me back then, and it's like this retro feel, a retro bias. Like, it might be different if I experienced it now for the first time versus having this warm, fuzzy feeling of when I was younger reading this book. But the answer is no. I can't think of a book that I read in the past that I reread and didn't like it as much, or if not more. It's a weird thing because most of my other friends, they get angrier when they get older, and they want things to be like they were. And I like the change in my entertainment. I like the old, I like the new, I like the never experienced. Like there's one comic that I read this week. Well, I guess you could say I read two sentences because that's all the comic was. It was from Source Point Press called The Burning Tree. And I'm gonna give it a 2 out of 5 because it didn't feel like a comic. You had to read it in landscape mode. And it's almost like I was in the mind of the artist, and I was trying to get out what the artist was trying to convey, but I couldn't do it. Like there wasn't enough on the page to see. But what it's essentially about is a woman. It looks like that woman lost her love, and she's like a widow, and she has lost everything, and she stares out of her window all the time, and at night she's consumed by the shadows and the darkness of the past. But I'm not too sure. I think there might be some deeper meaning in there that the writer artist is trying to convey, and I just couldn't get it. But I could have done without that. I did like the artistic license of it, but I gave it a 2 out of 5, but it took me 1 minute to read. But there were aspects of it that could have been better, but there were some panels in there I really did like. It just didn't feel like a comic. So it was like the first comic I've given a 2 out of 5 in a long time. And I think if it hit like that emotional tone where I could actually get the underlying meaning of what he was getting to, or the sadness that he's trying to portray, or the darkness that he's trying to portray, if I was able to get into that darkness, and I didn't just like I really tried to look at the panels and see, is there something there that I'm just not seeing, and I wasn't seeing it. But I don't grade everything a perfect score. I'll be honest with you, most fall into 4 out of 5, which means I really like it. Some are just I like it, 3 out of 5, and there are fewer that are, hey, I absolutely loved it. But I don't usually like not like it, and I don't think I've hated a book in a long time. I'm sure I could find one or two, but they're few and far between. And I could have been in a different mind space. He then asks, why hasn't anyone brought me a sausage and mushroom pizza? Why haven't you brought yourself one? That's the question. Because pizza's pretty cheap, even if you go to the grocery store to get a frozen one, or if you call Domino's. It looks like you live in the boondocks, though, so I don't know if you have access to delivery. The next question says, did you ever collect anything else with the passion you collect comics? Toys, probably. I used to collect every single DC Direct toy. I used to have all the Playmates, Ninja Turtles, and Dick Tracy, and toys is the closest that I could say, but it was never as much of a completism as comic books. And toys, I would probably still be into if I had a bigger house. But it's probably good. When I was younger, I did baseball cards and football cards, but that didn't last very long. We'd trade them and stuff like that. And then I went through the marble phase as a kid, but we would play marbles and we'd win them and lose them. But I would collect some marbles. Trying to think if there's something else I collect, and I can't. Oh, trading cards, the superhero stuff. I got really into that in my college years. I'd go buy a box of Marvel Masterpieces or whatever, and then me and Barb, before we started studying, we would open that box and then make sure I got all the cards. So I collected a lot of superhero cards back in the day. I still have them. The next question is there any comic you would leave in its CGC case? Yeah, if I had a comic book that was probably over a $5,000 price tag, then yeah, I would probably leave it in the case and try to find myself a reader copy. But yeah, I guess I it'd be like some kind of threshold of worth. How did you get into podcasting? By accident. I used to listen to Comic Geek Speak, and one of my first podcasts was Comic Book Noise with Derek Coward. That's who sort of produces this show and gives me the platform in which to speak. If it wasn't for I love podcasts. And, I was already, it was like 2005, 2004. I started listening pretty religiously. And I liked it. And then I started interacting through email or forums. And I enjoyed the talking back and forth. There were other people out there that enjoyed comics books as much as I did. And I probably wouldn't even thought of it, but Derek says, every week you tell me what you read in Mike M's Weekly Reads. It started off as an email to Derek saying, here's what I checked out, and here's what I thought. And he says, why don't you record yourself, and then I'll produce your show. So I started off with the show called Rocky Mountain Comic Book Noise. So it was like off of, because I'm in the Rocky Mountains, I thought I would do Rocky Mountain Comic Book Noise. I think I got to about 12, 13 episodes. And somewhere around 7 or 8, I met somebody on the forum called Heath Holland. And I don't know if he totally liked me. I get the impression he thought, man, you read a lot of comics and you're kind of an asshole, but I like talking to you. And I like talking to him. So I reached out to him. I said, would you be willing to do a podcast with me? And that's how Geek Brunch was formed. And we went pretty far, and I think it was Heath that sort of got me out of this like introvert shell in the comic book community. He did it through many means. Like he was the more talented one in terms of like entertainment and audio control and all that kind of stuff and getting guests, because we used to have a Geek Brunch listener on the show almost every week. And I met a lot of people. I met a lot of good friends that way. But I would have never done that on my own. I wouldn't have reached out. Like, he was reaching out to a lot of other podcasters and a lot of other people. And I don't think, I don't, if it wasn't for him, I don't think I would have met the dear friends that I have today, because I sort of met them indirectly through him. Because he was more of the guy that would get the other people on the show and stuff like that. And yeah, that's how it blew up. And then DC Noise started at a CGS. No, DC Noise started with me and Eric Martin, and he's since passed. He would still probably be doing the show with me, DC Noise. DC Noise, we would pretty much just pick new comics that came out and cover them, kind of like we do in DC Spotlight now with me and Kyle. But he had a heart attack, and that was very hard, and I almost quit podcasting at that time. And then Heath was going through some issues in personal life, and he wanted to leave Geek Brunch. And that's when I met Micah and Bill. And Bill, his I swear, God, he's like a brother from another mother. I love Bill. Like, I can't think of anybody else that I could podcast like 5 hours with. Like, you're on the phone. I mean, yeah, on the computer, but you're on the phone with somebody for 5 hours. I can't even talk to family for that long. And time just seems to drift when I talk to him, because I click with him so much. Like, I like, my wife makes fun of me because I could record a 5 hour podcast with Bill, and she's like, "You don't even talk to me that long." But we have a lot of the same interests, and we have sort of the same origin stories, and we're roughly the same age, so it's just like we click so well. And yeah, and then Geek Brunch Retro formed out of there. Mike Ems was really an article at one time, and then I decided, what the fuck? I'll just make a podcast. And it's sort of like easy for me to do, 'cause it's just me. It's like a diary for me. Like, I'm just sitting here chatting. I don't have anything written down other than some of the questions that you all provided. But yeah, Keith got me to go to my first con. Like, I would have never, ever. Well, me and my wife did go to San Diego, but it was different. It was way different than going to Heroes Con. It was, when we went to San Diego, it was more like experiencing the con. And seeing all the comics and all the creators and all that. And I did get to meet a fellow podcaster, Timmy Thum. He used to do the Thum podcast, and that was great. But when I started going to Heroes, like, if it wasn't for Heath, he got us all to go to Heroes. I wouldn't have met Eric Martin. I wouldn't have met Bill Bomer, like, in person. I wouldn't have met Micah, who was another co-host on Geek Brunch. I wouldn't have met Chris Ivy. I still haven't met Rob yet, but hopefully someday. I have met Kirk at Heroes, and I haven't met Kyle yet. I came close because he's in Chicago. I've met Daryl and Keith through conventions, and what I realized is, as time went on and I was going to these cons yearly, Baltimore and Heroes, I wasn't going for comics anymore. It wasn't even about the creators. Like, I didn't give a fuck who was there, or take any comics books with me to sign or anything. I didn't care. I was there to see my friends. I was there to hang out with my friends. And every year it became less and less time at the con. Like, we'd go to the bars and hang out and have this literally long lunch and a big dinner. And we were spending like 2 hours at the con on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Mostly at the morning, walking around the con. And then we'd do another 2 hours maybe at the end. So it's like 4 hours at a con every day, and that's it. The rest of the time was outside of the con and just enjoying each other's company. And I think if Heath didn't sort of crack that nut in my mind, I would still be more of an introvert, even though like I'm not an introvert. Like, I'm not afraid to speak in front of people. I'm not afraid of that, but I'd prefer not to. I'm like somewhere across between, like where my brother's a real extrovert. I'm sort of like somewhere in between. I can get out of my shell, but I'm mostly in my shell. But yeah, that's a interesting question. I could go on hours on all the different people I've met. And then the people that I navigate towards and the people that I've recruited to be podcasting with are like-minded individuals. Like, I pick Kirk because of his passion for comics. Like, I can sort of tell that the people that I want to be surrounded by, like Joe and Chris Ivy and Kyle and Bill and Micah and Daryl and Keith and Eric Martin and Derek, and they all have this like internal love for comics, and their love outweighs any kind of hate for the medium or displeasure of the medium, and that's who I like navigate towards. And I don't think I'll ever, I'm trying to think if I ever picked a podcasting person that I didn't click with. And I've been on a lot of podcasts, but I can't. There might be some guests that we've had that I like didn't click with, but overall, like, I've clicked with almost everybody that's been on the show or been a part of the show. Yeah, it's been a great experience, and I've met a lot of great people, and everybody's legit. I haven't met any false people. There's one person, but I never podcasted with them. But people that just weren't, like, socially, they were on social media, they're different in person. But I hope that answers your question. Long-winded. I think Chris Pfeiffer had a few. Let me see if I want to make sure I don't miss anything. He says, probably a stupid question, but are there any titles that when the previous orders were canceled due to the COVID delay that at least considered not reordering or resolicit? Did the delay affect your ordering at all? No. I mean, there's been, if you listen to this podcast and Geek Brunch, you'll know there's been some times where I've tried to make cuts, and then I realize that I'm not happy with those cuts. Even though I could be, but I can't psychologically be. I don't know, it's hard to explain. But I'm still ordering the same amount, and I don't think there's anything that I cut because of COVID. But it's a good question. I thought about it, but they mostly canceled titles. Like, Marvel canceled the Spider-Man Daily Bugle, and I was enjoying that. They canceled Morbius. They canceled, several Ghost Rider that I was enjoying, and they decided to cancel, but it's usually the publisher saying I'm stopping and not me. He had one last question. What were the best comic shops, customer service organization store you've been to on your trips? I mostly go to conventions. I don't visit comic shops. All About Comics was good in Arizona. That was a good shop. The owners decided to retire there, but that was a fun shop. Mile High in Denver is fun. I like going there. It's just like a warehouse of comics. Customer service, everybody seem nice. I liked when I go to a store, I like to kind of be left alone because I don't need help. I mean, I might ask like, where do you have these back issues? Because sometimes it might be hard to find, but once you point me in the right direction, I don't need help. I know a lot about comics, and very seldom am I surprised, and I know what I want. I just like to go shop. I like chatting at Ed's. I like Ed a lot. I still go to there as an LCS. A matter of fact, I opened up a box again with him, mostly getting cover Bs and stuff that I don't get through DCBS because I want to support the store. Plus, it's more beneficial for me to have a pull box of 11 books and get a 25% discount, as well as get a 50% discount on back issues instead of 30. So, yeah, I like Ed a lot. It's not the it's the best store for back issues in Colorado Springs. It's not the best looking store. There's a lot of other like stores that are just organized really clean and spacious and stuff. But that's my favorite store to be in and to talk in. I don't think I've visited in Albuquerque. Astro Zombies is a pretty badass store. I used to go to a store in Wyoming, but they're no longer there. They used to be called Nostalgia, and then it used to be called something else. I forget what the name was. But they're gone. Doc's News that I used to go to is gone. Don's Paperback Bookstore is open, but they're not comic books as much as they used to be. Time Warp Comics in Boulder is excellent. Excellent. Very friendly staff. Wonderful. Wonderful dollar bin. And it's like a dollar bin that's always reshuffled. It's fantastic. Probably the best dollar bin I've ever had. And sometimes we'll have discounts on those. I like Time Warp quite a bit. Hall of Justice, another great comic store in South Denver. If we go the back route and don't take I-25 up to Denver, then we always stop there. And Barb's real patient with me. She lets me shop for back issues. I like getting back issues there. Really good staff. Young staff, but very helpful. My brother just texted me. My nephew just asked him about my imaginary friend when I was young. Before I met, I was the firstborn. Before I met my friend Eloy, I called him John. And I didn't have a lot of friends. This was like from 2 to 4, probably. I had an imaginary friend, and his name was Sanchez. And his son asked him today, he goes, "I want Uncle Hulk." They call me Uncle Hulk. "I want Uncle Hulk to tell me about Sanchez." So that's kind of funny. My imaginary friend. That's pretty neat. I forgot where I was. Oh, comic shops. There was a comic warehouse. I went to there very seldom, but that's in Albuquerque. Doc's News I liked a lot. That was right outside of base. There was another place that was right by the university, and this was the time that right across UNM, University of New Mexico, and I was in the College of Engineering, and it was like right across the street. There was a comic shop. You cross Central, and man, I can't think of the name. They owned two shops. Maybe it was the Comic Warehouse. Maybe they owned a shop there and then up on Manal. But that was a cool place because they had like a lot. This was like 90, 94, probably. No, I'm way off. This was like 80. This was like 89 to 92. Like, I would go across the street, and this is during the comic book explosion. And this is how I discovered Valiant. I went across the street and I saw, what is this Archer and Armstrong number zero? And it was like by the university. So they got a lot of titles that. And this Image was blowing up and all this stuff. And I was like, God, I'd love to. I'd take an exam and to like decompress. I would like, I'm going to run across the street and see what comics they have. And I'd run across the street, even though I had a pull box at Doc's News, which was closer to my work because I worked all during college, like 25 hours a week, plus weekends at McDonald's. But yeah, I those are good shops, and it bugs me that I can't remember what it was called. I want to say it was the Comic Warehouse, but it wasn't because there was two comic shops by the university. There was one across the School of Engineering, and then if you went to the tennis courts on the far, I think it was the far east side, or what it was, yeah, the far east side. There was another comic shop up there. So there was like two by the university. I'm trying to remember all of them. Astro Zombies is in Nob Hill. That's a really cool one. That only came after I had left. But yeah, and over here I used to go to a place called Gotham. It was, man, it's weird how I forget some of the names, but it was called Gotham something. And my route here was there was that place, and it was on Academy, and I had a pull box there, and this was around the time that Acclaim Comics was coming out because he stopped giving me like Torah, like towards the end when it was getting harder to get their books. Like, I couldn't get the Shadow Mans and stuff. I decided to go to a place closer to the apartment, and that was near the mall, and that didn't last long because that guy at the mall, he closed really quick. And then we were close to moving to our house, and I started to get like a normal pull list, like 5 comics a month, just so I could save for the house. And then I started going to a place. There was a Mile High extension over here, on Galley, off of Powers, and I like that service. It was different than any other pull list I had because you prepaid your books. In other words, it was almost like you were DCBSing it, except he wouldn't charge your charge card until every Wednesday when your books came in. They would total it up and say, okay, you owed this. And then they'd put your invoice on top of your comic books, and then you'd come and pick your pull. And then that guy went out of business, and he sort of shafted me because I lost a couple $100. Because he was doing the same mechanism, and then he said I would just deliver to your house, and that worked for 1 month, and then he decided to like vanish off the face of the earth, And then I was left without a shop, and that's when I went to Ed's, and I've sort of been there ever since. And then through podcasting, I realized that I could buy more comics if I go online, and I went DCBS and then never looked back. I mostly went DCBS because Ed was missing a lot of my books, especially Independence. And so I initially started going DCBS for just Independence, and then it became bigger discounts, and I was like, oh, I gotta go to DCBS for every. And then when he said his shop was closing, which it didn't, but he said it and he told me personally, I moved everything over to DCBS. So that's kind of where. That was a long-winded answer, and but I got through all the questions. I'm gonna have to ask for more questions. But thank you, Kirk. And thank you, Chris. And thank you, Drew, for the questions. It's been a while since I've gotten to them. And I'm gonna take a pause here, get some water, because I finished my naked fruit juice. And come right back with the weekly reads. All right, I'm back, and I decided to just do 3 weeks so I could wrap it up before Barb gets home. At least I think I can. But let's do this. So this goes through August 31st through September 6th. I watched a lot of TV. That I watched HBO's documentary Class Action Park. That is a documentary about a park. I think it's near New Jersey or somewhere in there. That's really dangerous and had a bunch of lawsuits against it. People died on some of the attractions, and run by a bunch of teenagers. It's insane. Highly recommend checking that out if you have HBO Max or HBO. I'll put that on your DVR. Teenage Bounty Hunters is a Netflix show. I gave that a 4 out of 5. Both of those were excellent. That it's about two girls that they can almost like they're twins, but they're not like identical twins, and they can like look at each other and speak to each other, even though they're not really speaking to each other. So they have this like telepathic way to talk to one another, and they get into a bounty hunter situation where they can hunt people down. It's pretty entertaining. It got canceled, unfortunately. Cobra Kai, 5 out of 5. Karate Kid, amazing. Season 1, season 2. Absolutely loved it. Watch that on Netflix, even though it came from the YouTubes. Friday Night Lights, another 5 out of 5. This is my third time watching the series. I just love that show. It's one of those shows I can't stop watching. For the week of comics, we had 23 comics, 2 Marvel, and 21 DC. We'll start at the bottom with the 4 out of 5s. We had Justice League Dark number 13 through 25. This was me catching up on Justice League Dark so I could discuss it on the DC Spotlight. It's not the best Justice League Dark, but there is some good. There was some really good storylines in there, and I didn't really take notes on it, but some of the interaction, but I had saw between Zatanna and Hellblazer, I liked, and Wonder Woman was a real prominent figure, and I never really thought of her as a magic character, but she did fit right into the Justice League Dark, and then you had Swamp Thing and Detective Chimp. And yeah, there were some really interesting stories in there. Virtual Fighter, this was a series that really needed more, but there's only one that was produced for whatever reason. Virtual Fighter was a Sega video game I absolutely loved back in the day, and I found out Marvel put out a one shot. Roughly around the time that they acquired Malibu, so it's like this came over from the Malibu extension, and it pretty much just introduces the character and sort of sets him up, and then there's nothing to follow up. It's very unusual, but it very entertaining. Firestorm the Nuclear Man, I just started rereading that on the DC app, just to experience the writing of Ethan Van Sciver and Gail Simone, two opposing political views before it all went crazy. And I just wanted to see, and it's really entertaining. This has the Jason Rush and Ronnie Raymond mixture, and there's two firestorms, and then there's this Russian contingent, and Professor Steen is kind of like a bad person. Like, he's not a good person in this series, which might give some people heartburn. Superman War of the Worlds is an Elseworlds. It's like a War of the Worlds. What if Superman was caught in that? Took place in, like, I think the 50s or 40s. And there's sort of a surprise ending because it doesn't end the way you think it. It's not a very happy ending, that's for sure. Another 4 out of 5 was the Justice League Dark Annual. It was up there, probably my favorite of the Justice League Dark stories. And then the 5 out of 5 goes to Conan the Barbarian 241. And I'm trying to find 242. But the reason I read this for an episode of Retro was because it had a Todd McFarlane cover. And it was a very interesting story because he was going into this one town that was invaded. And it turns out that Red Sonja is the queen there. Like, it is very interesting. And I wanted to see where it goes, and the next issue has a Jim Lee cover, but I haven't been able to track it down yet. And then the third issue is a Wiles Portacio, so they had the Image creators drawing covers for Conan. And then Booster Gold, Volume 2, number 1 through 4. We covered that on DC Spotlight. It's an excellent. Those are 5 out of 5s. The Conan the Barbarian and the Booster Gold were the 5 out of 5s. They're the ones that stood out to me as being perfect. Booster Gold, this one is like he gets himself into a predicament where he's sort of a braggart and wants to be in the spotlight, and he gets himself in a predicament where he has to be the hero that nobody knows, and that's what makes this series very interesting, is he has to be heroic without anybody knowing that he's heroic. And it's kind of tragic at the same time because of what he is. The next week was September 7th through September 13th. We had a total of 31 comics, but we had one movie. I watched The Way Back with Ben Affleck. I'm a sports nut, movie nut. And this one didn't crack the, it didn't get me like as pumped as I would, like with Hoosiers or any of the other basketball films I've watched. I thought it would, but it didn't. I was kind of glad I didn't pay for it to see it at the theater because we almost did. This thing kind of came out the week right before COVID just went nuts. And we watched this on HBO. I gave it a 3 out of 5. I still liked it, but it's sort of about an alcoholic coach that tries to make him. He's not even a coach. He's a construction worker that's tries to go back to coaching. He used to be an awesome basketball player and goes into coaching because he's asked for a Catholic school, and it just doesn't have like those emotional beats that a sports movie, the emotional ups and downs, like the underdog and the becoming a champion and this kind of thing. And yes, they became a good team, but it was more about the drunkenness. At least I thought so. It was based on a true story. So there were 31 comics, 5 Scout, 15 Marvel, 1 It's Alive, 8 DC, 2 Alliance. Those alliances are the ones you get at Walmart, which I gotta check in November because the number 3s are supposed to come out. So the 3 out of 5 was Justice League Volume 4, number 23. Don't remember much about it other than this was probably the Legion of Doom Perpetua type storyline that was going on. First issue special number 3, Metamorpho. It was trying to get Metamorpho people excited about Metamorpho and get him his own series. He had his own series prior to that in the Silver Age, and this was their attempt to do it again in the Bronze Age. Sort of gave his origin story and sort of by the numbers, you know, Java being jealous of Sapphire and that kind of story. It did have Ramona Freyd in art, so who's not to love that? Ant-Man number 4, which was sort of the War of the Bugs with him and his daughter. Really kind of fun from a bug perspective, but sort of toned down to an all ages that left me wanting it to be a little bit darker. But overall, it was a good story, and I really liked how the bugs were involved and how they had to fight these like bug deities. Conan 15 through 19, this was the Dark Horse run. Got me through. This was me attempting to finish the first Epic collection from the Dark Horse run, and I did. And it was very entertaining. Dose number 1 is about drugs and in a science fiction type futuristic storytelling. It's from It's Alive. It was really good. I think there's supposed to be an issue number 2 on that, but I don't think it's come out. The Futurist number 2, not as good as number 1, but Butch Geist's art was amazing. I like the time period setting. It's like 1930s, I think, India, and it's interesting, but all over the place. But artistically, it looks beautiful. Those are a 4 out of 5. Captain America, Volume 2, 7 through 12. This is the Rob Liefeld stories. God, I loved revisiting this. This just Heroes Reborn. It just got me excited. The Rob Servations led me to read that, and then Avengers Volume 2, 7 through 9. Same reason. Fighting Loki and Enchantress, and it was just fun comics, in your face comics. Chap Yap drew the first 3. Liefeld drew some. I can't remember who took over from that. Liefeld left after 7, and then Wildstorm Productions took over from 8 forward. World's Finest, this was a 4-issue mini-series from DC Comics pre-52, and this dealt with the new Krypton and Dick Grayson as Batman. They worked together to stop Toyman, Toy Boy, Riot, Parasite, Mr. Freeze, the Kryptonian Man with the help of Robin, Guardian, Supergirl, Oracle, and Batgirl, the Stephanie Brown Batgirl. It was a fun series, and they had some unusual villains, and each issue was sort of like it was an ongoing story theme, but each issue could be read by itself, had different team ups. It was a good little mini series. Red Rooster number 2, this is the story about the superhero in the 1920s that's being hunted down by one of his old villains. He sort of forms his own Legion of Doom to go after every ally of Red Rooster and just start taking things apart. First issue special number 2 is the Green Team. This introduced a bunch of rich kids that had reasons to do good with their money. Sometimes it was boredom, but the interesting thing is there was one kid, African American kid, that was a shoeshine boy. This is done by Jack Kirby, by the way, but he actually became rich, and it's very odd how he became rich through the stock market. Like he invested money, he came across money he didn't have. Accidentally through the bank, and then he invested it into the stock market, became rich, and then paid back the bank when they found out that they had a bank error. It was so weird. Very entertaining. That was first issue special number 2. Vlad Dracul, this is sort of like the takes the historical aspect of Vlad Dracul. who the Dracula mythology came from, and tries to take it in a it uses the roots of history to make it an interesting fictional storytelling. It was really good, from Scout Comics. Nora's Song continues to be great. That's about a daughter and a father. They actually get in a car accident, and then she gets thrown through the ice, and then wakes up in a Viking, Norwegian-like land, and she's trying to find her way back home. That's a Blake, I can forget her name, Northcutt, and I think there she co-writes it with another writer, and it's excellent. That's also a Walmart Alliance book, highly recommended. That's a 5 out of 5. So we crossed over to the 5 out of 5s now. It Eats What Feeds Us. This is another creepy scout book. God, I just love the beats of this. Like, it's not like it's exploring something we hadn't seen before, but it's done in such a good horror old house vibe that this guy is hired by this older woman. She's kind of sexy. But this house is creepy as shit. And this guy takes this job from an ad in the newspaper, which is really weird because nobody reads the newspapers these days. But, and I think they even poke at that in the story. And it's just a creepy ass house. And there's blood in the kitchen. Like, there's just weird things that are happening. And he knows it's not right. And he's. And the woman's sexy. Like, I think he like fucks her, and there's all kinds of crazy shit that's happening in this book. She's dying too. Like, I don't know what is going on. I can't wait to read number 3. I gotta find it. First issue special number 4, Lady Cop, one of my favorite comics of all time. It's a story of a killer at a sorority. And then the girl decides she's the remaining survivor, and all she knows is the killer's boots. And she decides to become a cop and does it very heroically and fights some men that are abusing women. She stops a girl from potentially killing herself because she's got the VD. And reunites her with their father. God, I love this. It's like a social service message, but it's so good. 5 out of 5, absolutely adored it. That takes us to September 14th through September 20th. Only 26 comics read, 1 Scout, 3 Marvel, 4 Image, 18 DC. 1 movie read, watched The Strangers Pray at Night. I give it a 4 out of 5. This is the sequel to The Strangers, based on a true story of home invasion, very loosely based on a story of home invasion. But this is about a family that goes and visits their relatives, and these kids with masks have killed the relatives that they're with, and they hunt the family down. It's pretty scary in terms of like invasion of your privacy and trying to survive. The 5 out of 5 movie was The Musketeers. This is not even a movie. This is a 3-season series from the BBC that's on Amazon Prime. You need to watch this. If you're a Musketeer fan, it is a much, much watch. This is like I'm like old school. I like Michael York and Richard Chamberlain and those Musketeers. They were always my favorite. These actors are the first to ever succeed those actors in my mind. I absolutely love the story and how they intermixed it. It is so good. The 4 out of 5s were Avengers Volume 2, number 10. This was the Heroes Reborn stuff, wrapping up that arc. Grit number 3. Grit Scout started off better, in my opinion, than it finished, but I still gave it a 4 out of 5. It turned out that he was hired to go find out who was killing these like magical goblins that, and then it just turned into like this blood fest. But I think there's more story to be told, even though this was the final issue. Butcher Knight, This is an Image comic that was later reprinted. I read it from Clover Press as a trade paperback, but I want to get the singles because I enjoyed it so much. Artistically, it's great. It comes from Top Cow at the time it did anyway. Now it's with Cloverfield Press, and it's sort of like a modern day take on King Arthur and storytelling and monsters and such, and I really liked it. We got Justice League Volume 4, 24 through 41. This is a marathon of reading in DC, which dealt with Perpetua, the Legion of Doom. It also had the Year of the Villain. Venditti took over in issue 40. Most of that before that was Scott Snyder with the Daxamites Eradicator story. And I seem to like more what when Venditti took over. It became more of a grounded ideas, and I enjoyed it quite a bit more. The 5 out of 5s were Vlad Dracul number 3, which completed that series. Really cool story. There's a love story aspect to it that's always been there too, and there's been movies on this as well. There's been a Boom book on Vlad Dracula by Cullen Bunn as well. I think it's called the Brothers Dracul. This does deal with the Brothers Dracul, by the way, because one of the brother goes to invade with Raider the Vlad and his castle. So because they were captured. The father sort of gave up Vlad and his brother to this monarch because that's what you had to do for him not to invade your land, is you'd supply him with soldiers. And Vlad escaped and went back home, and his brother continued to be raised by this monarch. So he sends his army there, and Vlad pretty much slaughters a bunch of them, but it's a bloody mess. But very entertaining. I gave it a 5 out of 5. War Man, number 1, is a 2-issue epic Marvel comic. This is Chuck Dixon. It's sort of a gun dealer that ends up on a island because they shoot his plane down because he's on the wrong place at the wrong time. And it was so good that I had to go to mycomicshop.com and get War Man number 2, which I read later. And there's only 2 issues, but it was really, really good. And then Chamber of Darkness number 4. It's a Marvel comic. The reason I bought this because it had Star the Slayer, which was a Marvel Conan prototype by Roy Thomas and Barry Windsor Smith right before they started doing Conan number 1. So like, I had to read it. It was really good. And then there was a Jack Kirby monster type story. Then there's a story about a rich guy who hires someone to freeze him so he can survive into the future by Tom Sutton and Dennis O'Neill. Really good stories, really good anthology of horror. And that's all I have. I hoped you enjoyed listening to an episode of DC Noise for a change. And we should be back. I'll try to cover another 3 books, and eventually I'll get caught up if I can keep a steady rhythm going. I'd like to get back into a rhythm on this show. And we'll be back. You can reach me at mike@comicbooknoise.com and email, or you can send me Twitter at Mike Myers Brunch, and that's MYERS. That's the best way to send me questions, and you'll have your name put out on this podcast, and I'll also read your question and tell you what the answer is. So that's how to get a hold of me. This is at geekbrunchpodcast.com on the website. On the Facebooks, you can reach me at Geek Brunch Podcast. Click the like button and follow us there. And that's about it. Have a good one. Talk to you later. Bye.